From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, people around the world celebrate the Christmas holiday. The U.S. military says Islamic State militants did not shoot down the Jordanian F-16 fighter jet that went down in Syria Wednesday. Sony Pictures begins distributing the movie The Interview online despite threats from hackers. All these stories and more are just ahead on The Voice of America. I'm Dave DeForest. A Royal Jordanian Air Force pilot has become the first member of the U.S.-led coalition to be captured by the Islamic State militant group. The militant said they shot down the plane as it was flying over their Syrian stronghold of Raqqa on Wednesday and captured the pilot. The U.S. Defense Department dismissed the shoot-down claim, saying evidence indicates that the Islamic State did not shoot down the aircraft. VOA Sharon Bain reports on the status of the coalition's air fight against the Islamic State.
Jordan says Islamic State militants have captured one of its pilots after his plane went down in northern Syria during a mission against IS insurgents. According to the U.S. Department of Defense, up to December 15th, partner nations Jordan, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates have been responsible for 65 of the total 553 airstrikes in Syria. The coalition has flown thousands more sorties against IS. Air Force Colonel Edward Schultes told VOA in an email that many of the flights involved dynamic targeting, which means aircraft fly over areas where enemy forces are operating and look for militants or objects to strike. Andrew Liebman of the RAND Corporation and former principal deputy director of the National Counterterrorism Center says Washington and its allies are trying at all costs to avoid collateral damage.
It's a lot harder to identify, to distinguish between the communities and ISIL. So we're being extremely careful, I suspect. The tolerance for collateral damage in both Syria and Iraq is really, really low. We do not want to accidentally drop a bomb on the wrong guys. So that means a lot of planes are coming back to base without having dropped their munitions.
According to the Department of Defense, from December 5th through December 12th, airstrikes destroyed some 14 Islamic State fighting units and positions in Syria and hit another 15. The airstrikes destroyed four such units and hit another 14 in Iraq. The airstrikes also destroyed a number of IS-controlled buildings, bunkers, fortifications, guard towers, vehicles, excavators, bulldozers, and a front loader. Liebman says bulldozers and excavators are used for protection, for digging trenches, and for threatening villages. Defense officials say the operations cost about $8.1 million a day and totaled more than $1 billion since August when the U.S. began its airstrikes, a price tag that Liebman says the coalition can easily afford. Carl Mueller, a senior political scientist for the RAND Corporation, believes the fight will be a long one.
ISIS is a particularly nasty manifestation of a political and ideological movement that's not going to go away just because ISIS is destroyed, right? So this is sort of a particular fight within this larger arena of the struggle against sort of Islamist extremism.
But according to IHS Jane's Intelligence Review, there has been no significant change in the tempo of Islamic State operations since the airstrike began. Rather, the group has shown an ability to quickly adapt its tactics and replace senior commanders killed by airstrikes and Iraqi forces. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Washington.
Ukrainian government negotiators and their pro-Russian separatist counterparts ended a first day of talks Wednesday without visible signs of progress toward ending an 8-month rebellion near the Russian border. As participants left the meeting, a separatist envoy described the talks in Belarus as difficult. He said no date has been agreed on for the next meeting. People around the world converged on the West Bank town of Bethlehem for Christmas Eve celebrations hosted by the Palestinian Authority. Robert Berger has more.
Christmas Christmas celebrations kicked off in Bethlehem with a festive march by Palestinian boy and girl scouts through Manger Square. They marched past a giant Christmas tree facing the ancient Church of the Nativity, where tradition says Jesus was born. A large crowd of local Palestinians looked on, including Sufyan Sobek, who is a Muslim.
Must people be happy because it is a Christmas. We are here in Bethlehem, the city of the peace, and we have a special way of Christmas. The Muslim and Christian people, they be happy in Christmas, not just Christian people, and it will be Merry Christmas.
Pilgrims came from all over the world to participate in the festivities and worship at the ancient Grotto of the Nativity. Espoir Serukiza is from the Congo.
I'm so much blessed to be here, and it's a good place for Christians, for believers, and I'm a Christian, so it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity being here, and it's an honor and a privilege.
The turnout is lower this Christmas than in recent years. The 50-day war between Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas in the Gaza Strip several months ago brought a sharp drop in tourism, and the industry still has not recovered. Since the Bethlehem economy depends on tourism, that is bad news for Palestinian shopkeepers in Manger Square, like Mary Jacamon.
We should see more tourists these days for Christmas, but no, it's when a tourist hears there's something going on or violence or anything, they don't come.
Adding to the hardships in Bethlehem is Israel's security barrier, erected over a decade ago following a wave of Palestinian suicide bombings. Latin Patriarch Fuad Tawal, who heads the Roman Catholic Church in the Holy Land, passed through the concrete barrier to get to Bethlehem from Jerusalem. He said he hopes the wall will come down and that there will be bridges of peace instead. Robert Berger for VOA News, Bethlehem.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, in questa notte santa,
in the first of several Christmas blessings, Pope Francis celebrated midnight Mass at St. Peter's Basilica, calling on the world's Roman Catholics to remember that God's message of peace is stronger than darkness and corruption. The pontiff urged Christians to allow God to love them, emphasizing just how much the world needs tenderness today. Later, in his second annual Christmas blessing to thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square, the Pope condemned what he called the brutal persecution of minorities by the Islamic State group that seized large parts of Syria and Iraq earlier this year. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington, wishing you a Merry Christmas. Stay with us.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOANews.com.
Visit VOANews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.
Sony Pictures has started distributing the comedy film titled The Interview online a day after announcing that 200 independent theaters will screen the movie today on Christmas Day. The movie is available across several digital platforms, including YouTube, Google Play, and Microsoft Xbox. Sony says it was essential to release the movie, especially given the assault upon the business by those who wanted to stop free speech. Sony pulled The Interview from general release last week after several large U.S. theater chains said they would refuse to show it because of threats of violence. The comedy tells the story of two journalists who are recruited by U.S. intelligence to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The International Criminal Court was created to pursue some of the world's most serious crimes in places unable to deliver justice. No perpetrator is too powerful to face charges at the Hague-based tribunal, or at least that's the idea. But the collapse of the case against Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and other setbacks are fueling a debate about the ICC's effectiveness and relevancy. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports.
The appeals chamber, by majority,
Chatsong partly dissenting.
A victory for the International Criminal Court. Earlier this month, appeals judges at the Hague Tribunal upheld the conviction of Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga. The sentence closed the tribunal's first ever case, and it brings to three the number of cases the court has concluded since becoming operational in 2002, including one acquittal.
There has been no indication from the representative of the government of Kenya that they intend to adopt any of the measures.
But December is better remembered for the collapse of the prosecution's case against Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta. The ICC's chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, filed a statement withdrawing allegations against him related to post-election violence in Kenya. She blamed Kenyan authorities of intimidating witnesses and failing to deliver documents the prosecution claims were key in building its case. Today, the Kenyatta case is strengthening debate around a fundamental question. Should the ICC continue to exist? For Anthony Dworkin, a rights specialist at the European Council on Foreign Relations, the answer is yes.
Well, I believe in the principle of accountability for these terrible crimes. And I think if the International Criminal Court was to be eliminated now, that would be a devastating blow for the whole ideal of international justice. So I really would oppose any move to eliminate the ICC.
Many disagree. Critics argue the ICC is influenced not just by justice, but by politics. The United Nations Security Council refers investigations to the ICC, but three of its members, Russia, China, and the United States, are not member states. Critics say its accomplishments, just two convictions in a dozen years, do not justify the hefty costs of running it. And some African leaders claim the court is biased since all those now on trial are African. Steve Lemoyne is senior advisor for the Coalition for the ICC, an international umbrella group. He lists a number of court successes this year, including getting charges confirmed against former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo, whose trial begins next year. He says the court needs the resources and support to do its job effectively, including from its African critics.
The majority of the referrals from these situations in Africa have come from Africa, beyond the referrals by the Security Council and others. As long as there's evidence indicating that they should pursue those cases, I think they should basically do that.
In the Kenyatta case, analyst Dworkin says the prosecution stretched too far.
To pursue a case against an African head of state without the evidence to sustain the case is really a very unfortunate position to be in, even if it simply relates to the fact that it's hard for the court to build a case against a head of state and a government that's not cooperating, and it's going to be impossible for them to do that without stronger international support.
But this month, the court stepped back when it felt it was not getting that international backing. Chief Prosecutor Bensouda told the UN Security Council she had suspended an investigation into alleged war crimes in Darfur for lack of support from the body. Observers say that is unlikely, since Security Council member China has traditionally supported Sudan. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who has an ICC arrest warrant against him for genocide and other charges, claims victory. ICC coalition advisor Steve Lemoyne.
The UN Security Council itself seems to be uncommitted and has not taken any action where the government of Sudan itself has failed to cooperate with the ICC arresting Omar al-Bashir. So the Security Council needs to take more concrete action in cases where its member states fail to abide by its own resolutions.
In other cases, the tribunal is reaching out. Beyond Africa, current investigations include cases in Colombia, Georgia, Honduras, Iraq, and Ukraine. In Afghanistan, Bensouda says she's looking into the U.S. military's alleged use of so-called enhanced investigation tactics, or torture. Washington is not a signatory of the Rome Statute that established the court, but Afghanistan is. Analyst Dworkin says the Afghanistan example underscores the ICC's fundamental dilemma.
The more it goes after cases which are politically difficult, which are involving major powers like the United States, the less likely it is to achieve results, the more likely it is to provoke the hostility among the big powers. On the other hand, I don't think it's a viable way forward for the court to look like it's simply justice for the weak countries of the world.
The solution, Dworkin says, is not to abolish the court, but to strengthen its ability to do its job properly and to be more realistic about what it can achieve and what it cannot. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's ruling National Resistance Movement has given him additional political powers ahead of possible changes to the Constitution. Elizabeth Pula of Kampala reports on what this means for the future of one of Africa's longest-serving leaders.
At the NRM Delegates Conference in mid-December, a monumental shift took place. More than 10,000 delegates assembled in Kampala approved a motion allowing the party chairman, President Museveni, to appoint or dismiss party leaders. Prior to this conference, the NRM elected leaders by popular vote. In less than a week, the president used those powers, and the NRM announced a shakeup in the party's top offices. First to go was the man who presented the biggest challenge to Mr. Museveni, NRM Secretary General Amama Mbabazi, who had been dismissed as prime minister months earlier. The treasurer, deputy secretary general, and electoral commission chairman were replaced as well. Silver Kayando, a lawyer who worked on the NRM legal committee for the conference, says the consolidation of power is a good move to make politics more efficient.
NRM is a political party desirous of maintaining its political power and rule. So if they've deemed it fit that through the party chairman having more power is what will deliver them victory to maintain their hold on power, so be it. I don't see it. Power is there to be exercised, and he definitely, the party chairman, in my view, should have power. Right now, politically, Museveni is stronger. He displayed a lot of political genius. He was able to play his cards straight.
The consolidation of party power comes at a crucial time. The Uganda Law Reform Commission is currently reviewing a number of proposed amendments to the Constitution, including allowing the government to seize land for investment purposes. This comes ahead of Uganda's plan to award new oil and gas exploration licenses in 2015, after a seven-year moratorium. The discovery of gas and oil reserves has led to an increase in land disputes and claims. Other proposed constitutional changes would allow the president to direct police policies and make it tougher for members of parliament to shift political alliances. This is not surprising given the recent history of swift crackdowns on political opponents, including the repeated jailings of Kizza Besigye, a former presidential candidate. President Museveni is a former rebel leader who has been in power since 1986. He has won four elections in the past 20 years, but critics say that is because he stacked the deck, engineered an easy election for himself. The last election in 2011 was widely criticized as flawed. So it is not surprising to human rights activists that one of the proposed constitutional amendments not being considered is the restoration of term limits. The two-term limit was scrapped in 2005 by constitutional amendment, allowing the president to run for his third and fourth terms. At the same time, restrictions on political pluralism were also put in place. Livingstone Siwanyana of the Foundation for Human Rights Initiative says he believes the latest move to increase the president's powers is to counter early any possible challenge ahead of the 2016 elections.
Of course, our concern is that we need to have a level playing field as we go towards 2016.
Mr. Museveni's 28 years in power make him one of Africa's longest-serving leaders on a continent that has close to a dozen presidents for life, rulers whose continued power is unchallenged. The president has not officially announced his candidacy for a fifth term, but it seems clear that the NRM is setting the stage for another term in office for Mr. Museveni. An official announcement is expected to come in the next 6 months. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Traffic came to a halt in downtown Hong Kong Wednesday when bundles of money flew out of a security van. Drivers and passersby were not shy about taking advantage of the Christmas Eve windfall. Local TV news footage showed people abandoning their cars and scrambling to pick up bills strewn along a busy eight-lane highway. The cash blizzard littered the Wan Chai district of Hong Kong around lunchtime. Police arrived on the scene and shut down the road, but not before some $2 million went missing. People were seen walking away with bundles of Hong Kong notes. Well, that's it for today's edition of International Edition. Thank you for joining us. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website. It's voanews.com. Sitting in for Susan Yaki, I'm Dave DeForest in Washington. Have a Merry Christmas. This is Today in History. On December 25th, people around the world celebrate Christmas, a holiday that Christians observe as the birthday of Jesus Christ. There is no historical evidence that Jesus was really born on this date, but his birth has been celebrated on this day since 350 AD, when Julius I, the Bishop of Rome, proclaimed the observance. Perhaps by design, Christmas was celebrated at a time when many pagan religions celebrated the winter solstice. Some of the traditions connected with those religions, such as Yule logs, evergreen decorations, and festive parties, have become a part of the Christmas tradition. At midnight mass on this day in 1818, the congregation from St. Nicholas Church in the village of Oberndorf, Austria, heard the first public performance of this Christmas carol. Stille Nacht, or Silent Night in English, has been translated into hundreds of languages and is sung by untold millions at Christmas time every year. The words Silent Night held special meaning in 1914 for those fighting on the Western Front during World War I. In the pre-dawn hours, the sounds of Christmas carols could be heard coming from both German and British trenches in Belgium. Next came requests not to fire, and when the fighting stopped, soldiers from both sides gathered in no man's land between the trenches to exchange gifts and even compete in a brief football game. Hundreds, if not thousands, of soldiers shared this one moment of peace during one of the bloodiest chapters in world history. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
In a popular American short story, a young couple, poor but very much in love, frets over what to give each other for Christmas. To buy her husband Jim a chain for his proudest possession, a gold pocket watch, Della sells her proudest possession, her long brown hair, to be made into a wig. Jim finds Della a fine pair of hair combs, but he can pay for them only by trading away his watch. When they exchange gifts and realize what they've done, their now useless presents are all the more precious because of the love and sacrifice they represent. The holiday of Christmas, which millions of Americans and others around the world celebrate today, has inspired many such tales. Some deal with the lessons of generosity and hope, others with the value of friendship, family, and faith. Oddly, one of the most famous, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, is essentially a ghost story. What they have in common is a spirit of redemption and rejoicing that has long touched the human heart. Tradition is as much a part of the holiday as is its spirit. As in much of the world, millions of Americans will exchange gifts, worship together in their various ways, then gather perhaps with family and friends to complete the celebration over dinner. Many will volunteer to help the homeless, hungry, and others in need. These sentiments transcend nationality, however, and even religion. As the world gets smaller, the Christmas spirit is seen in many places, from Europe to Africa and even Asia. In Japan, Christmas is known more as a time to spread happiness rather than as a religious celebration. Presents and cards are exchanged, and parties are often held for children, with games and dancing. In Madagascar, an island nation off the east coast of Africa, it's summer at Christmas time, but even though it's hot, many homes are decorated in the spirit of the season with holly and imitation snow, even though none of them exist there. The message of peace on earth and goodwill toward men is universal, and one that Americans wish to share at this time of year with all citizens of the world.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage.
at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Inila, VOA DC, langsung dari Washington.
Halo, ini Irfan.
Ari di sini.